Welcome back to another episode of our Eagle Perspective podcast. I'm Mike Siciliano. I am joined today by, I think I have to call you regular guests now.
Oh, I mean, we like that.
I actually think you two, other than our head of school, Rod Gilbert, have probably been our most frequent podcast guests.
Wow, what an honor.
Someone's going to look it up and tell me I'm wrong, but in my memory, that's the truth. So welcome to David Thomas and Sissy Goff. Once again, world-renowned child counselors, authors, podcasters, all-around good people. We're thrilled you're here.
We're so honored to be with you.
We love this school. This community is one of our favorite places to visit.
Amen.
Well, I think this is, third year in a row coming to speak with our families. And, of course, doing a podcast episode. You're always so gracious with your time. And why don't you just remind people, because we do have a lot of new families since you first started coming. So tell us a little bit about your work, what you do, some of the books you've written, just as a way of introduction.
Well, we are both therapists at a place called Daystar Counseling Ministries in Nashville, Tennessee, where we have been practicing for over 30 years, both of us, each of us.
We started when we were 6 and 7, very young in the profession.
Doogie Howser-esque.
Yes, right. Exactly. Yes, which we are so grateful for that work. And out of that, we have gotten to have a podcast and write books and travel to amazing places like this. And what would you add?
Just share what we're learning, having sat with kids and families for a lot of decades.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful you'd have us back.
Oh, yes. Gosh. Like I said, it's an open door every year. It's becoming just a regular part of who we are now. So I would love to just share a little bit about some of the books you've written. I know we're going to talk, I think, a lot today about The Worry-Free Parent in particular. Yes. But what are some of your other works?
We have two new children's books that are part of a series that we're really excited about. And, you know, we are seeing kids who, well, statistically with anxiety, the average age of onset used to be 8. We're seeing it drop to 6 with signs as young as 4 and 5. Wow. And we're becoming concerned about resilience earlier than ever, a lack of regulation for kids. And so it was fun as therapists to write children's books and to feel like we could really get on the front side of what a lot of kids might struggle with as they grow. And so we have Lucy Finds Her Courage, it sounds like they're for girls or boys, and they're not. They're all for both. Sure. But Lucy Finds Her Courage.
Owen Has What It Takes.
Yep. Mm. Happy Finds Her Calm. Happy struggles with self-regulation in school. Happy hops way too much, hopping over the teacher, hugging too much, all the things. And then we have one called Pippa Finds Her Contentment. We don't even know.
It's not out yet, but it's about having a younger
sibling and the jealousy that can happen.
Yes.
Pippa learns to share the spotlight.
Okay.
And Pippa has on a tutu.
Yeah. All right.
So those are really fun. And then we have some other books coming out in the spring that we're really excited about. I don't know if we can talk about them yet, but we will. Capable is the book for parents, and I Am Capable is a workbook for kids.
I love it.
Super excited about this.
So I think whenever I have you on, I'm guilty of probably oversharing about my family and my own parenting. My girls are now 10 and 7, so my 10-year-old, I probably need to self-censor a little bit, speaking of self-regulation, but I will just say it sounds like phenomenal topics, so I can't wait to get them.
Looking forward
to it. I will also say, I know we've talked a lot about anxiety. It's obviously, by nature of the inputs kids have now compared to what they didn't have, and I'm sure a whole host of other reasons, very top of mind for any parent in today's society. I still remember your definition of anxiety, which I say to myself in my own anxiety all the time. Anxiety is an overestimation of the problem and an underestimation of my ability to handle it or to solve it.
Yes.
And that has really stuck with me for, three years now or however long we've been doing this. So, okay, let's talk about being a worry-free parent. How do I stop worrying?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I was going to jump in and just say.
I thought you were, and I was jumping over you.
Well, one of my.
I'm being happy hopping too much.
That's all right. We got a good book for you. One of the first things that Sissy just talked about with parents, which I don't think we could remind parents enough of this reality, is that anxiety is a response to cumulative stress over time, which if you just sit with that explanation for a second, that catches all of us. Yeah. Like, think about it. We've lived through a global pandemic.
Right.
Like, we are living in a complicated time in our world. And there's an acceleration that's happened for kids and adolescents that I think is an invitation into this cumulative stress that we're all experiencing. So I love that you share that right out of the gate, that we hope frees parents up to just say, okay, this is the world I'm living in. These are the waters I'm swimming in. So of course I would be experiencing some worry and anxiety at different moments. So if we extend grace to ourselves to acknowledge the normal of that, then our next jumping off natural point could just be, what do we need to do within that? Like, if these are the waters I'm swimming in, how can I pay better attention to it? How can I develop some skills that allow me to manage it so that it doesn't spill over to the kids I love? Because we talk a lot about how anxiety is contagious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell them your dog training story.
So the book, Owen, we just mentioned, was written about a therapy dog that I had for 12, almost 13 years. And when we were going through the process of training, it's a really long, labor-intensive process. And when you finish all this investment of time and money, you take the dogs for a first visit. And I remember preparing for that and thinking in my head, I hope he can do all the stuff we've been trained to do, because this would be exhausting to have done all this work and then he can't. And the instructor said to every one of us, okay, last, maybe most important reminder for all of you before you go into your setting is that if you don't remember anything else from the training, remember that when you walk in the door, anxiety travels down the leash.
Wow.
Isn't that good?
It stopped me in my tracks. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, if my dog could pick up on that, how much more so could the kids I love?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was that great reminder of, we help set the temperature in our home. Mm. So to the degree that we're doing our work, we talk a lot about how doing our work is really the greatest gift we have to offer the kids we love, then we could let the spillover be more calm than more worry, more anxiety, more stress.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a great reminder I've needed a lot.
Yeah, well, I think even just as a parent, you know, when you know your kids are struggling with something, whatever it is, in the same way, I mean, I see it with the teenagers, right? They're in this social media world. They see the best, most curated versions of all their peers' life. It makes them question everything. But I think I've realized I do that as a parent too. I mean, you know, when my kid is struggling with something, I look around and it's like, what are we doing wrong? How come nobody else's kid is struggling with this thing? I don't know if no one else's kid is struggling with that thing. I just don't see it, right?
Right.
So, you know, what tips do you have for parents in terms of that? I mean, obviously comparison is the thief of joy, but, you know, are there some practical realities to parenting in a world that is so connected and so comparative?
One of the very practical things, because to your point, we are seeing more parents than ever before who are not only anxious, but feel defeated, feel like everyone else is doing it better. And one of the things we've been saying to parents is the phone is part of the problem. I mean, holding the phones, being on the phones, but also all of the influencers, all of the parenting voices that are telling you everything you need to be doing today. And if you don't X in a certain period of time, you're going to miss it. But there's just so much pressure. And all of us parenting experts that are out there are saying different things. And so we are encouraging parents to pick a voice, two voices that you listen to and follow, and stop listening to the rest. Let the rest just be noise, because it's too much. It makes you feel too much pressure. And one of the things we're talking about in the new book is how we disagree with a lot of what's being put out there right now. Because what happens is, I think the more we abdicate our voices, the less we trust them. And as parents, your intuition is your superpower. And the more I'm trusting the expert, the less I'm letting myself not only grow the intuition, but listen to it.
Yeah.
And so to put the phone down means I have to think through, what do I feel like is right in this situation? And you know, as a parent, you know your kids better than anybody else does. Yes. Even therapists, even experts on technology. Trust your gut as a parent.
So what are some, are you willing to share some of the things that are out there maybe in vogue right now that, that you would say you disagree with?
Yeah, we will. We'll just step right into that.
That's great.
We talk a lot about how often corrections are overcorrections. I think for every one of us in a lot of spaces. And so the arena parenting is maybe not unique in that space. And I think a lot of parents in this day and time grew up in homes where they maybe didn't feel heard, didn't feel seen. You know, children were seen but not heard. And so there is this intuitive desire that comes from a good place of, I really want my kids to feel heard. And so I want their voice to matter. And so we believe strongly in listening and attunement. And we have sure seen evidence of where we can maybe do too much listening or listening for too long at times.
It's all empathy all the time.
Yes.
And only that.
Yes. We talk about the importance of the equation, naming and navigating, equal parts of both when it comes to emotions. And I would argue, I think culturally, we're knocking it out of the park in terms of equipping kids with the ability to name their emotions, but not to navigate. I think we kind of stop midway. And it's like serving a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with only peanut butter. We need both parts to make up a PBJ sandwich. And so how could we be equipping kids, back to even why we wrote that book about regulation, with the skills and abilities to regulate? Because it is listening. And it's also learning skills.
Yeah.
It's equal parts of both.
Gosh, my brain is just like so many thoughts. Number one being the conversation that my wife and I just had of, why do we ask the kids what they want for dinner sometimes? Mm. Why don't we just say, this is what's for dinner. Have at it, you know? But I think it is that trying to be empathetic and meet them where they are and all those things.
We're giving kids a lot of power.
Yeah.
And we talk so much about how too much power leads to insecurity in kids. And we wonder why they're so anxious.
Yeah.
And not that that's all of it, but it's certainly a sliver of it.
Yeah. Yeah. What else that's out there in vogue right now that maybe, and some of these I could see coming from a good place. Like, it's probably could be argued for years, parents didn't listen enough. Mm-hmm. Right. And now it's been this swing, you know, so far in the other direction. Are there other things like that maybe, you know, we should push against a little bit?
I don't know that I would say what's in place is what concerns us as much as what's not in place.
Okay. Mm.
And we did a talk at a school in Nashville probably in March of last year. And we used the word discipline. And you would have thought we said a curse word, a really bad one. I mean, the parents looked stricken and like, are you allowed to say that? Can you even do that anymore? And I think that's part of the trend. Instead of us remembering boundaries create security in kids. And when we say, hey, I want you to take a deep breath, yellow light, whatever it is that we're trying to give them opportunities to regulate their little emotions or their bigger emotions, and they don't. And then we say, I'm going to need your tablet for the next 30 minutes. We're teaching them self-regulation. But all of that sense of discipline or consequences, it feels like a no-no because of what all the experts are saying right now. And it's both. It's all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That. Speaking as someone who has had to dole out discipline here, I get that same reaction.
So, yes.
Totally understand that.
And we start with empathy. I can tell you're frustrated.
Right.
How do you want to handle that differently?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Okay, I know you also talked with our parents about mantras today.
Yes.
And the value of mantras. Do you want to share a little bit about how that can be valuable as a parent?
Yes. Well, I would say, I wonder what the statistic, I'm just going to make something up. I think kids probably remember 5% of what we say, if I had to guess. But every one of us could finish the sentence, my mom always said.
Yeah.
Or my dad always said. And when I think about the things my parents always said, it was typically in reaction. It wasn't intentional. It wasn't necessarily thoughtful. It was a panic in the moment.
Yeah.
And we love that in the midst of all the anxiety and the pressure, parents are more intentional than they have ever been. And so to think about what are some things you want your kids someday when you're gone to say, my mom always said.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's you can do hard things, whether it's just I love you over and over. And so picking some mantras like that, we feel like are so important. And the example I gave in the time is I have a sister who's 16 years younger than I am. And so she has a 6 and a 3-year-old, and we lost our mom 5 years ago. So I am their aunt, but I'm also grandmother-ish in their lives. And we all went to Disney World when my oldest nephew was 4. And he got really nervous in line for Pirates of the Caribbean, of course, because it feels scary when you're in those tunnels. And I hadn't thought about it ahead of time, but I got down on his level and said, a little bit scared, Henry, a whole lot of fun. A little bit scared, a whole
That's
lot of fun.
Great mantra.
It's become something we talk about all the time. I mean, he learn to ski this summer. And same thing. We were shouting from the boat, a little bit scared, a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
But it's so helpful. And I think he will someday laugh and say, my Diddy always said, a little bit scared, a whole lot of fun. But basically, in that, I'm saying you can do hard things. You're so capable. And hard things make us feel better about ourselves. Yeah. They end up being really fun.
Gosh, you know, so my dad was in banking. And he used to do all this intentional stuff around money and what is money. And I remember the first rule of money is God owns it all. That was always his first rule. And I don't remember any of the other rules. But I remember that one. And there's been various times in my life where you know, we've been in a financial situation or something. And I've just kind of, you know, as an adult, been like, God owns it all.
Right.
And I'm grateful for that. So he's probably mad that I didn't remember any of the rest of them.
But to our point, kids remember very little of what we say. Absolutely. So make it count.
Yeah. What about other mantras that you've used?
You know, it's interesting. At the book table today, a mom walked up to us and said, I have a brand new mantra based on something you all said. Like, it's going to be this thing I say back to myself. And we had talked about how you can't hear the voice of God unless you quiet the voice of worry. Mm-hmm. That we've been given this gift of the Holy Spirit, but I can't access that if my brain is taken up by worry. If it's, you know, using up most of the cognitive real estate that I have access to. And so she said, I'm literally going to say that back to myself over and over. Like, I have to quiet the voice of worry to hear the voice of God over and over. That, I think, is this invitation into doing this tool we taught parents today called Stop, Drop, Flip. And she was like, it's going to catapult me into that space of doing that work. Because to Sissy's point, like, that means I can trust my gut. Because God's given me the Holy Spirit. He's going to prompt me in the right ways. He's going to move me in the directions I need to move, but I can't get there easily unless I can do the first part of that.
Okay, what is stop, drop, flip? Because we do stop, drop, and roll here. Very different.
Yes.
Different circumstances. What is stop, drop, flip?
Well, we talked about how stop, drop, roll stayed with a lot of us. Yeah. We learned that fire safety strategy in elementary school. And our hope was that the familiarity of that would make stop, drop, flip in the exact same way kind of stick and stay. And the stop, it's part of a tool that we in our work call cognitive restructuring, which is just where we notice and change our negative and maladaptive thoughts. And we talked about it being a way that we live into the wisdom of Scripture saying, take every thought captive. Like, that's a very active thing. It's not passive. And so it begins with me stopping the thought that, to Sissy's great introduction with anxiety in general, is often negative. It's not life-giving. Like, all the different ways it, you know, shoves us into the past and the future and keeps us from living in the present because we're worried about something that did happen and might happen again or something that could happen. So if we can begin with stopping the thought by noticing the negative, noticing the signs, then we can move toward dropping the thought. And we walked parents through one of my all-time favorite parts of the Worry-Free Parent book is Sissy has these breath prayers that parents could do in the carpool line, you could do at a stoplight, you could do before walking into a hard moment in your job. Like, our challenge to parents was, don't just teach these to your kids, but practice these on your own and then talk about where you're using them. And breath prayers are a great way to drop the thought and just slow ourselves down with the breathing and take in a lot of truth in the prayer part. And then the flip is where we have to acknowledge the fact that research has long told us that it's instinctive to hold on to negative thoughts. Like, they stick like Velcro. But we have to hold a positive thought for at least 15 seconds for it to begin to take root. And so we did a demo where we took some of the most common things parents will say to themselves or to each other, and then we flipped it. So we did a demo of what that could look like, that our hope was they leave with some really practical ways. Mantras are in the middle of it too, that help me stop and drop these thoughts so that I can show up and be the person I want to be, the parent I want to be more in those moments.
Yeah. Okay. I got to ask about the breath prayers.
Yes.
So, like, give me an example of a breath prayer.
So really any scripture, and you just take it and kind of cut it in half. And so I'm going to breathe in. I can do all things. Breathe out through Christ who strengthens me. Slower than that.
Yeah.
But any verse like that you can take. And so I just picked some of my favorite.
Philippians 4:13, that is my favorite Bible verse of all time. Did you know that? Or was that, you know?
Intuition.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, that's right. You read me like a book.
No, but any scripture like that.
Okay. And then you mentioned doing a demo about, you know, some common thoughts. So what are some of, what are some of those, or even one that you could walk us through and how we would flip it? And by the way, I'm fascinated by the idea that, you know, we have to tell ourselves the thing for 15 seconds before we really actually start to believe it. I mean, people, I think we operate from the opposite of, I don't want to be inauthentic and say something I don't believe, therefore I'm not going to say it. Yes, like that's actually
that's a
barrier of us saying it. But what you're saying is you have to actually let yourself say it in order for it to take root.
Absolutely. And that's a 2025 issue.
Yeah.
You know, I think used to we would say fake it till you make it.
Yes, exactly.
And we don't say that anymore because we value authenticity and it can trip us up.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Well, I'm thinking of one that's relevant to the conversation that we're sharing right now.
Okay.
I'm so grateful for your dad's words. Can I use that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I shared a story of, I have three kids. My oldest is a girl. We found out a year into her life that we were pregnant again. We're so grateful. Went for our ultrasound and found out we were having twins. So if you do the math, I had three kids under the age of two.
God bless you.
Thank you. Yeah. And on the drive home from the ultrasound, which is so telling about me, I began spinning out, thinking we don't have a car big enough. We don't have a house big enough. We don't have a budget big enough. I was even calculating college tuition because I realized they'd all three be in college at the same time. And so if I were to have utilized this on the drive home, I could have said, the negative would have been, I have no idea how to make this work financially. And then flipped it and said, God owns it all.
Yeah.
God owns it all. Like, these kids belong to him. They've just been entrusted to me. Like, if I were saying some version of that back to myself repeatedly, it will start to take root because it brings me back closer to all the evidence of, there has not been a chapter in my story where I could not make the payments. You know, like it is always, it's been manna type scenarios sometimes where I haven't known where it was going to be right around the corner, but it was exactly what I needed in the moment. So I think to the degree that we can practice those, and I think breath prayers allow us to not only anchor ourselves to truth, but slow down all of the biological process that's happening of my heart rate increasing and my brain spinning out that gets me positioned when my brain and body are settled to be able to anchor stronger to that truth.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? As soon as you tell that story, I was thinking, I was picturing you at that age when you found that out. And when you said, I have no idea, my first thought was, you had no idea. You had no idea that we'd be sitting here in this room getting to speak and that God would bring all these amazing things that help supplement the salary of a therapist.
There you go.
And that would be, those would be the very things that take care of your family. Like, isn't that funny that you can flip even the exact thought to think, I had no idea.
Gosh, it's so powerful. I mean, both for, I work a lot with teenagers. I'm sure it's the same with the younger ones as well. It certainly is for my two. But also with parents, you know, we've gotten very good at predicting the future. Teenagers in particular, it's like I describe it as they know exactly the only way anything will ever play out. You know, anything that they're feeling right now is how they will always feel about it forever. It will never change. There's no hope of it. And it's like by faking it till you make it, so to speak, you know, you start to think about, you almost, in forcing yourself to talk yourself into it, you find real things that actually are like, well, there is that, well, that part of it might actually be true. Well, it could, you know, and I just hadn't thought of it that way, you know. So super powerful.
Well, along those lines, one of my favorite things that you talk about in the Worry-Free Kids talk is the importance of flexibility. And I think part of why teenagers can think there's only one way is because we've all gotten more rigid. And that in the absence of healthy, appropriate coping strategies, we all pick control. Maybe we women pick it more. But I think starting younger and younger, practicing flexibility with kids is so good. One of the assignments that David gives is to, around the dinner table, when you go to sit at the dinner table tonight, to move one seat to the left.
Oh, yeah. Great.
And when we say that, when he says that in a parenting seminar, people look like he just said, go cliff jumping. I mean, they look so stricken.
I can tell everyone who has a firstborn daughter went up to her husband, she's not going to handle that well.
It's 100% my firstborn daughter. It's like, oh, this is my spot. Our kids sit in the same spot in the cars, you know? It's so funny that you say that. My wife and I have a story about this too. The man who married us and his wife, his name's Rich Case, unbelievable guy, pastor, businessman, phenomenal guy. But he told us he and his wife don't actually have a set bedtime spaces. Like, they will change who sleeps where, just as a way of being more flexible.
Wow. And,
yeah.
That is great.
And I mean, to us, it was just like, there's no way we could do that.
Yes.
But there is, right? We just have to embrace it a little bit. So
we have a friend that we work with who she was telling us just anecdotally in the office that she had some family friends who were coming to stay with them. I think she said for a month. And she said, so my boys will be sharing a room for a month. And I said, wow, how do they feel about that? And she said, I don't care. She said, I want them to be inconvenienced out of the generosity of who we are as a family. Mm. It is so good
that
for them.
Awesome.
Yes. Yeah. And I think flexibility teaches that, but it also wards off a lot of anxiety, a lot of rigidity. Yeah. I can't say that word. Yeah. A lot of things that really contribute to where any of us can struggle with mental health.
It's so interesting. Like, it's hard to feel gratitude when you're so set on a certain way and so inflexible that you're so focused on what's not perfect.
Right, right. Your fists are clenched.
Well, and the wisdom in, you know, something as simple as let's shift one seat to the left is, if I'm practicing flexibility in the small things in life, when the big things come, not if, but when.
Mm.
You know, when I get a letter in the mail to the great story that Rod told today to all the parents, and I didn't get into the school I wanted to.
Yes.
You know, it's like, have I practiced enough along the way to where my system knows what to do in those moments?
Yeah.
So,
well, that is a very interesting topic we're delving into. But, you know, the whole college thing for parents is very, it is not worry-free.
Right.
You know, it feels like such an overwhelming, important life course setting. And so that, you know, something that happens freshman year, you know, I see it a lot in parents' eyes of, even in the discipline conversation, you know, will the colleges find out about this?
Mm.
You know, and it makes it hard. So do you have any tips on that front for parents who are going through that college process of how to handle that in a way that doesn't let the anxiety travel down the leash and, you know, that helps prepare both themselves and their kids for whatever news is going to come on all the sides?
I think I would go back to one of the things we talked about today of trust the process. And no's are good. I mean, God is in the no's as much as he's in the yeses. Mm. And there is something that's happening. I mean, graduate school, I applied to Wheaton College, Auburn, and Vanderbilt. I only got into Vanderbilt, which makes zero sense. But that God wanted me there in Nashville so that I could work at Daystar, so that everything that has happened career-wise that I'm getting to do was because I was at Vanderbilt and in Nashville. And I think when we can trust that God is in all of the no's, all of the harder pieces, that he is growing something, he's laboring right alongside us, as it talks about in Romans. And so I think when we can anchor ourselves to that kind of truth, it can help us have more of an open-handedness to whatever's happening.
Yeah, that's so good. You know, I was just thinking, first, we both feel so heavy-hearted for kids and for parents to navigate this process in this day and age.
Yes.
And I've laughed over the years and said, when I applied to the University of Tennessee, you know, all you needed was a pulse and a checkbook. Like, that was it, you know, and it's just a whole different game.
Yes.
And none of us could have imagined 30 years ago when we started doing this work that there would be a college admission scandal because parents were so panicked. They were thinking, I need to game the system.
Yeah.
You know, just no way of imagining it would become what it's become. But I think to Sissy's wise words, like, even in this moment, even with it being a different game, can we plant that firmly within what we know to be true as people who are believers? You know, like, can we believe that? Which allows us then to just say, there's a place for every kid.
Yeah.
Differently than that just being like some kind of shallow saying, but something that we claim to believe to be true. Yeah. And that, to your great story, there's nothing that's impossible, and he's going to make a way. And it might be the exact opposite space we as parents imagined our kids being, or not at all what they dreamed. And I love that Sissy told a great story about not making cheerleading when she was in sixth grade and how crushing it was then, and how it opened the door for so much of the work she would end up doing over the course of her life, because it took her in a completely different direction she would not have chosen. And your mom would not have chosen for you.
Oh, yeah.
So
yes.
It's a part of what I think, again, just allows us to step back into believing what we're saying.
Yeah. The line that Rod has brought here that I love is, college is a match to be made, not a prize to be won.
Of course,
there's a match out there for everybody, right?
That's so great.
Yeah. Okay, so if anxiety does travel down the leash, what are some things for me as a parent, for any of us as parents, to see it in ourselves before it gets to our hand, if you will, and stop it from getting to the leash and going downstream?
I love that you're saying that, because I think if you have a child who has anxiety, I would say it would be really great to think outside the box and wonder a little bit if maybe there is some leash happening. Because as a parent, if you're anxious, your kids are 7 times more likely to deal with it themselves. And we talked today about the 5 ways we see anxiety show up in parents the most, or the 5 byproducts maybe that are a result of that. And I'll go through them quickly. One is that anxiety distracts us. You know, worry and anxiety live in the past and the future, what did happen, what might happen, rather than the present. And so I told the story that a mom said to me one time, it's like I'm trying so hard to get it right as a parent that I'm not even parenting. Mm. So anxiety distracts us. Anxiety makes us attach future meaning to present problems. So when we find ourselves forecasting, jumping to college when they're in third grade, just doing the, well, he's not now, so he never will, all of those things that are so easy to do, that's number 2. Number 3, anxiety causes us to micromanage, that we step in, we can't control the big things, which, hello, parenting, you can't control the big things, and so you lock down on the littles.
Yeah.
Anxiety makes us angry. And we are having more parents than we've ever had in our offices, confidential offices, talk about losing it with their kids.
Yeah.
And what we said to the parents today that we would want to say here is that it's not that you're angry because you're a bad parent. It's that you're angry because you're trying so hard to get it right, and it's too much pressure. And so the things we'll talk about in a few minutes, we think really can help. And then 5, that anxiety takes away our warmth and joy. And we have seen this certainly with parents in our offices. And it's not that anxious parents aren't warm. It's that when we're anxious, we get so intense and so focused and so panicked, and we can't access the warmth and joy that is so central to our relationship with the kids that we love.
Yeah.
So those would be the 5
problems. Gosh, that's really good.
Thank you.
Okay, so how do we address those things?
Well, we talked earlier about the most important gift we have to give to the kids we love is to do our own work. And so we camped out for a long time today just talking about the understanding piece, which I think is foundational both for us and for our kids before we can move into the work. But I would want to say to that question, and going back to something that you said that I think is worth noting, I have great certainty that there's at least one, if not dozens of parents who heard her say, your kid is 7 times more likely, and went straight to a place of thinking, I caused this.
Yes.
I'm the reason for this. And just spinning out around that. And what we would want to say is the last part of that sentence is that when you do your work, you have the capacity to be the greatest agent of change.
Yes.
Not the two of us with all the training we've had, but you have the most relationship, you have the most history, you have the strongest observations. But that can't be done well unless you do your work. So we get so excited, one, when we sit with parents who have, but parents who are still actively doing that and reporting that in age-appropriate ways to their kids. Like, hey, can I tell you a story what happened today? Like, I had to give a presentation to my entire staff. I was a wreck. I went in the bathroom and did breath prayers for 1 minute. Like, I want kids to be hearing those kinds of stories from their moms and dads that or that reminder that anxiety is just not something that magically goes away after your 21st birthday, but the long game is learning to manage it, and that can be done, and you can live a full and abundant life. Yes. And so
amen.
Also, that feels important to note.
I love that you just modeled flipping a thought.
There it is.
That's a pretty good one. that I'm learning in real time here.
Yes.
So,
yes. Because we've sure experienced it. Like, I think it's harder, honestly, for me, I don't know if you'd say this is true for you, to work with parents of an anxious kid who haven't struggled, at least one of them, because it just seems irrational. And you're tempted to just say things like, quit worrying about that. That's never going to happen. Why do you keep thinking that? As opposed to, if you have lived with anxiety, you know exactly what it feels like when your brain gets hijacked and you can't stop the thought easily. So
yeah, it's good.
I have a couple I'm working with and they are amazing. And they're, both of their parents were not very healthy. And so they are working really hard to figure out what that looks like. And so one of the things that we offer in person and over Zoom is parent consults. And so I do these parent consults with them, and he is anxious. He doesn't want to acknowledge that he's anxious publicly, but he certainly is.
Yeah.
And he is the CEO of his company. And they came in recently and he said, okay, so I need to tell you what I just learned. And I said, tell me. And he said, I was at a conference and they said a CEO's job is to be the calmest person in the room. And he said, Sissy, my immediate thought was, I think that's a parent's job too.
Mm. Wow. That's got to feel really good.
Yes.
That's
and he said,
cool.
So I'm trying to figure out what that looks like
in
a different way. And so there is hope, no matter where you are, no matter what your parents have been like, to do it differently and to be the biggest agent of change, to David's point. Yeah.
Well, it's good because my wife won't mind me sharing that both her and I have struggled with anxiety. So I don't know if that makes our kids 14 times more likely or 49 times. I'm not sure how the math works on the sevens. But I think what you both do so well is just provide hope and some tools and some ways of reframing things that make it a lot easier for us. So I can't say thank you enough for spending more time with us. I would say I always have a little bit of nerves about hosting this, but a whole lot of fun.
Oh. So, there you go.
Really, really, really glad that you're here. And you've become such good friends to the school. So thank you so much for all of your investments into us.
Love being here. Thanks for having us again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for watching or listening. If this is the first time you've caught one of our Eagle Perspective podcast episodes, there's plenty more of them. You can catch them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or elsewhere podcasts are available. You can watch our video podcasts on YouTube. We look forward to seeing you again soon.